Fang Banger.
Hello, and welcome to Fang Banger's podcast. We're chaotic, horny friends rewatching the chaotic, horny HBO series True Blood. I'm Lossie.
I'm Elise.
I'm Melissa.
And I'm Tasia.
This week, we're discussing Season 2, Episode 12, Beyond Here Lies Nothing. This episode originally aired on September 13th, 2009. It was written by Alexander Wu and directed by Michael Cuesta.
And our summary from Wiki, the mayhem in Bontorm reaches a fever pitch as Marianne prepares for her ultimate bestial sacrifice, conscripting Sookie to be the maid of honor at the bloody nuptials. Meanwhile, Sophie Anne warns Eric to keep the lid on Bill's inquisitiveness. Jason leads Andy into the heroic abyss, and Hoyt has a hard time swallowing Maxine's endless stream of insults. Deliberating on what might be his final move to save Sookie and the town, Sam is forced to put his trust and his life in a most unlikely ally, Eric. And that ally is so unlikely because it's not Eric.
I was wondering if you were just gonna correct it or like just...
Someone cannot tell Eric and Bill apart. I don't know how that's
They
true,
don't but... look anything alike.
That is like the least possible thing to like possibly not tell people about. Anyway, we have an email.
Oh, yes.
Elise, would you like to read our email?
I would. If you may remember the episode this season where Tessa came on and talked with Lossie about tree sodomy, we received an email from our theme song creator, DJ Empirical. The subject line is sodomy.
Straight and into the point.
And then he writes, I couldn't resist that email title. Just catching up, and I heard Lossie and Tessa discussing someone's sodomy arrest. I wanted to write to say that sodomy laws in America were originally intended to limit any non-procreative sex, but eventually were used mainly to demonize queer people. This includes not just anal sex, but literally any sex that cops didn't like. So yeah, I don't know that a tree would apply here, but we're already familiar with the arrest happy cops in Bontorm. Stephen. Yeah, that makes sense. Like, a blowjob could probably count as sodomy in these people's eyes.
Yeah, that's such good context. I had no idea.
Thank you for writing us.
Yeah.
I definitely feel like a tree was raised, though. So you're now suggesting that it was a blowjob to a tree.
I mean, it could be. Like, maybe, you know, a branch.
I'm just happy that someone took tree sodomy as seriously as we did.
Yeah.
I think we found our people.
Wonderful. Has anyone else got those of you who weren't on the episode? Tessa and I sort of went. I hesitate to say went deep into tree sodomy, but certainly touched on it.
You're now addicted.
So
to
those
it.
Of you who weren't on the episode, any comments on tree sodomy? Or anything to do with that crazy weird Mike Spencer nonsense.
All I'll say is that of course it was Mike Spencer. That's all.
Yeah. I guess I'll also say that like it's interesting that they chose that word because even at the time it, you know, effectively meant something else. You know, it didn't mean just any non-procreative sex. So I think the show like intentionally knew what they were doing because how they're using like the vampirism and the other supernatural creatures is like an allegory for queerness. It's just like one more of those things that they're intentionally choosing. And we got to talk about if trees have buttholes, so it's just great. Because I definitely expected people to take this show so seriously.
Right. On that note, let us move on to the finale. First impressions of the episode. Who wants to go first? Elise, you've written a heck of a lot of notes, and we are very appreciative of you for doing so. Would you like to start?
I paid Lossie to compliment my note taking. All I was gonna say was that in general, I found this episode to be a lot of fun. I was rather hysterical because there are some really, really funny like one-liners, and actually, the second time I watched it, I was like, okay, maybe almost too many one-liners, but it works. I don't know if we'll get into this later, but I was most amused by those two ladies that were, like, discussing in Merlot's, like, what probably happened in the town. And they were like, Marianne Forrester rhymes with Martian foreigner. And then Sam was like, Mountain Dew, good choice.
The Mountain Dew line made me laugh, too.
But in general, I really enjoyed this episode, and I think it made sense that Sookie was not in on the plan, because I think if Sookie knew what was going on, she's not a good actress, and I think that she would have given him away, and Marianne would not have believed that this was all happening.
I definitely think you cannot tell Sookie a secret. I agree with
yeah.
that.
I love that we kind of start getting a little bit of the old Jason back. Like, Jason has been kind of in a bad spot for so long that we've missed, like, the silliness of him. Like, just the ridiculousness that is Jason Stackhouse. Him rolling up thinking he's going to save the day. He's, like, strapped. He's got this whole, like, paramilitary thing going on. And he, like, instantly falls over. Like, the second they get there.
Yeah.
He's just like, I'm one of you now. Like, it's so instantaneous.
I think he was like, fuck yeah.
It's like an ironic smash cut, even. Like, it's just really, it's fun get some of that lighthearted Jason back, especially, like, considering how awful it is to see kind of Lafayette fall under, and how awful it is to see, like, where Tara ends up at the end of this episode, too. Like, to have a little bit of, like, the silliness there to balance.
I'm increasingly convinced that Jason drank some V at some point during Dallas, because literally ever since he left the Church of the Sun, or maybe it's just the love of, I'm not going to say a good woman, but the love of Anna Camp has turned him into an absolute maniac again. He is quoting random films all over the place.
I love the smell of nail polish in the morning.
Misquoting random cliches. He's maturing like a macho man should. It is remarkable and a joy to watch our absolute moron come back again. I think he was getting awfully close to being a himbo, and he's gone away from it again. And thankful for that.
For me, I felt like the actual, like, wedding stuff felt like it came out of nowhere. I like it as, like, vibes and, like, the set piece. You know, we get to see so much of what Sookie's house has turned into, and, like, all the women and their dresses. Like, I like all of that, but I was sort of taken aback. Like, this was part of Marianne's plan. Like, she's been building a bridal party. Like, I do not understand this. But Sookie infiltrating that group, and along with some of the other aspects of like how this stuff with Marianne plays out, are reminiscent of the book. So it really just put in mind to me that the adapt choices that they make to put this season together based on what they have in the book is just really smart and efficient for what they wanted to do with the season, which is kind of connect these characters together, give Michelle Forbes a ton of stuff to do, and all that. Although Victoria is still correct that they change so much of the character in the book's name's Callisto. They change so much of that that's like, I'm glad they didn't give her the name, because the only thing is that both the creatures are called a maenad. Like, that is nearly the only similarity. But there was enough of these little, like I would almost call them Easter eggs, maybe, as to the way that the stuff plays out in the book, that it just made it feel like the writers who did all of this were just being really smart and intentional.
Yeah, the only thing I'd say about that wedding is it suddenly makes sense why she turned up with a wedding cake to Tara's birthday now, because she's always preparing for.
I did not think of that, and it makes complete sense. I do want to say one thing that I feel like I probably have this later in my notes, but I wanted to shout it out. Like, this whole season, I've been really amused. You know, Jason obviously was, like, hooked up with this, like, awful group for a lot of the time. But as soon as he, like, woke up from that, he's been, like, really funny. And, like, I was very amused the whole time about his, like, paramilitary, like, nonsense and, like, guns and weapons and chainsaws. And at the end of this episode, I kind of felt a little bit different about it, because I don't know if it's, like, the 2024 bit, but, like, you know, at the end of the episode, obviously, he kills Eggs, and I wonder if he wasn't so, like, hopped up on, like, all of his macho shit, if, like, he could have... I mean, there... We can get into that later, but, like, it was hard to watch that and them talk about covering up how that happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, in, instantly. Like,
present day. Like, they instantly were like, Jason, go leave.
Yeah.
You know, and he's like, I got the murder. Like, it was all very, like, it felt really gross, and I believe that that's what would happen in that situation, 100%. But, like, it made me, it soured me a little bit for, like, how excited I was to, like, watch Jason be an idiot all season. Like, it made it, like, it ruined it a little bit for me. Like, I was like, oh, if he wasn't all, like, guns and shit, like, that might not have happened.
It leaves it on a really upsetting note, obviously because of, like, our current context for life, but also, like, I think that even when the show is made, like, it's, you know, that it's a fucked up thing to do, and you know that the writers are aware of, like, the reason that Jason did this is because he spent so much time with these weapons and talking about killing people and talking about, like, stand your ground shit, and it just doesn't feel like the show understands, like, how serious that is. And I just think that that sort of is, that's for me, that's what is, like, contributing so heavily to, like, It's, like, sad. Mm-hmm. It's, like, sad at the end. I don't want to necessarily say, like, I'm soured on it, but it's, like, not a high note, even though we like Jason acting crazy.
Right. I think I meant, like, I'm soured on my own excitement over it, not, like, the show. Yeah. And I do think, like, you said, it wasn't good in 2009 either. Like, I just probably didn't know better.
I can't remember what I felt the first time I watched it. I felt watching it this time that I felt the show knew what it was doing. I felt like they knew they were showing this as really bad. And they were showing the difference between Andy now versus Andy literally exactly one season ago, when he was trying to lock Jason up for literally everything, even when he knew he wasn't guilty for things. But I don't think it played it for laughs. It to me, it didn't come across as like as trying to play it lightly. It tried to play it tragically. Now, the fact that, and we can maybe let's just get into this now and we can pick it up again later, but the fact that both these seasons have ended with the death of a black character feels really fucking uncomfortable.
Yeah, I don't think the show was joking about that part of it. I just meant, like, they were obviously making it very silly that Jason was like, I love guns now, and, like, that soured for me, because, like, that when you're someone's like that, that something like this is what happens. Is kind of what I was thinking. But yeah, no, I don't think that anything that happened at the end of this was played for laughs either. I would agree with you on that.
Okay. I think the only thing I'd also say is I found that this season, I was expecting to find this season sort of creeping intensity and creeping unnervingness of the way Marianne's built up. And I definitely continue to find that. And I also remember that she kind of dies in a slightly goofy way. And I think she still dies in a slightly goofy way. It's a satisfying way. The way that little trick plays out is neat. And I didn't really see it coming. But it is. She's sort of immortal, and she sort of like dies by like, almost tripping over a banana peel.
It satisfies like my own personal sense of justice that she knew before like she went that she got played. Like that made me made it really satisfying to me that it wasn't just like, oh, she died because she believed she could die and she believed that she was meeting her God. Like, no, because of everything that she's done and the horrible impact she's had on this town, I was really happy that she had that moment of like, oh, I'm stupid. Oh no.
Yeah.
I fucked this up.
She was really like convinced. She was like, oh, I'm the sacrifice. I'm the vessel. And then when Sam changes back, I was like, fuck you.
She's like, there's no God, or she said something like that. And it was just great.
Yeah.
I mean, good Lord, woman, you got tricked by Sam a lot. I mean, come on.
I got tricked.
I think that was very bold, honestly, because they knew this whole time that, like, the goal was to cut Sam's heart out. So, like, the fact that – and Bill wouldn't have been able to put Sam back together, like, all the king's horses, right. All the king's men. There's nothing that Bill could have done post Sam getting his heart cut out that would have brought Sam back to life or prevented him from dying. So the fact that he only got stabbed in the chest and then that seemed to be good enough for Marianne was really – convenient. It was very convenient for the show because Sam needs to continue to live, but when you try to
does
stand
he,
up to like logic,
does he
you're
really?
Like, no. I mean, from right, our perspective, like if, no. But yeah. From theirs, I guess. Yeah.
from contractual obligations, so I guess.
Right, he's yeah. Still with it.
So, I kind of organized the talking points between like wrapping up Marianne and where everyone's at and then post Marianne where everyone's at setting up the next season.
I think that's pretty much almost splits the episode in two.
So before Marianne is killed, we have a little scene with Hoyt and Maxine, where Maxine is having the time of her life, dancing and twisting and singing. Mm-hmm. I was like, Maxine, you are having a great time. Like, I want to come hang out with you. I know she sucks, but, like, if I was listening to that music, I would have been twisting around in my kitchen as well.
And she's trying to take her dish of, like, frozen sausages and ice cream and sweet potatoes and stuff or whatever the hell that was as well. Hoyt's asleep and she's trying to escape.
The contraption he had on his, like, he, like, tied a, like, string to, like, his arm so he would know if she left. It kind of reminded me of, like, Ferris Bueller when he's trying to, like, trick about being, like, in school with, like, the snoring thing and the, like, body moving and everything.
The thing about Maxine being, like, under Marianne's trance that is funny to me is that there really isn't much different about her. Like, she's just as mean. She just seems like Maxine, maybe a little bit drunk, but like not enough has really changed about her. She's like still completely ineffectual. Like she's not doing anything. She's not getting anything. Yeah. She can't even get away from Hoyt, who is asleep. Like can't step over a fucking string. Like she sucks. She's just she's just doing nothing. And it's funny to me that like everybody else is out there like building these like effigies and stuff, and Maxine Foynberry's stuck in her house making a shitty casserole, which I mean is fitting.
Well, she wants to go.
Yeah,
right? Hoyt is
she's just so ineffectual. She just sucks.
I just imagine she was with everybody, then she might have had to have been the person that Jason kisses after he turns and gets possessed. And so I'm just thankful that she was busy just dancing instead.
And that interesting reveal about Hoyt's dad and her lying about his cause of death in order to get insurance money. And then using that as leverage to keep Hoyt from ever leaving. That is fucked up.
That was so fucked up. It made me so... I mean, it made Hoyt devastated. And I feel like before that, when he kind of like didn't want to believe it was true, and he was like, I'm going to take everything you said about daddy and me the last couple days and lock it up in a little box and forget it ever happened, and I truly believed that Hoyt was going to do that. Like I think people can do, I don't think it's healthy, but I think people can do that, and he was going to, and then he found out it's really what happened, and you can't forget it if it's what really happened. I guess
men would rather build traps in their house than go to therapy.
I thought Hoyt was handling this all, like, pretty well, you know, with the, like, understanding that this, like, isn't his mom. You know, like, I'm going to take everything you said and I'm going to forget about it instead of being like, oh, well, you know, drunk words or sober thoughts or, like, whatever. She's not drunk, but you get it.
Yes.
But I thought Possessed Maxine was so funny and fun. And I'm sure that this actress had, like, the most fun time doing this. And it's also amazing because Maxine would be mortified if she knew that anyone saw her behave this way, including Hoyt. So I think that's great because she sucks. And I also thought it was funny when she called Hoyt Norman Bates.
It's really funny since like Like, it makes sense, but it also doesn't make sense. I'm like, wait, you're his mom, and you're not dead. Like, what? I guess, cool, because he was keeping her locked up or whatever. But, like, the whole thing is just... It honestly made me want to rewatch Psycho.
I've never seen it, actually.
We should watch it together, because it's great. And I watched it for the first time in, like, a film studies class in high school. And so I could point out, like, fun things that I still remember that are probably just like it on is, the IMDb page.
Is slightly less goofy than True Blood.
Slightly.
just promise to never watch the remake, which I unfortunately saw in the movie theater and was terrible with Vince Vaughn.
Isn't that like a Gus Van Sant? Yeah, it was sort of.
It
like,
was
yeah,
a cursed. Project.
Isn't it just I don't know. Like a legit shot for shot remake? Like, why would you do this?
Whatever. So, real quick, sorry. I know this is like severely off topic. It's in color, which I think sucks. It's basically shot for shot, except for the whole point of Alfred Hitchcock to me is that he's like master at like subtlety. Gus Van Sant like basically erased all the subtlety and made it like fact, and that is like makes it a bad movie in my opinion. Subtlety is interesting, and if you have talent, you could maybe do it. I say as someone who could never be, I like don't know, like I can't be subtle ever, so I'm like also criticizing myself. But yeah,
well, like you're not out here remaking Alfred Hitchcock movies, so I think it's fine.
No, like no, that would be terrible.
Subtlety and shamelessness.
I guess. I have shame.
So I'm going to call this the tale of the hottest people in the world. Eric and Sophia.
Oh, I loved it. They're so fun and playful.
And Hadley's there too, and the random Eurotrash boy that they picked out of the lineup at some point.
Do we think that... Do you think that she's actually cheating at Yahtzee?
She's definitely... She wins... She gets Yahtzee 6 times in a row. She's 100% cheating at Yahtzee. She's constantly going, it's just luck. It's just...
Yahtzee
it's just
is a great equalizer.
Yeah.
It's a great equalizer. She's 6 Yahtzees
yeah,
in a row.
Yeah, you would think
we
that
played
when you
a 4 million.
6 times in a row.
I love that this she was like, for my like social, physical, and intellectual... Yeah, like, inferior. Like she's superior. Yeah, inferior. Why did I not think of that word?
I like how she's demonstrating. It's like a live demonstration of like, you know, America's meritocracy. Where it's, yeah, it's just really luck. Funny. It's just luck. Perfect. And hard work.
Yeah. Oh, that reminds me of this article this week I read or was posted somewhere I saw about like Lisa Rinna being like, I'm just lucky. I have like good genes. And I'm like, no, you're a rich lady. Like, calm down. One thing I find super interesting about Sophie Ann is how she seems to have like taken all of her favorite things from all the time that she's alive, and like that's her life. Like she dresses kind of some like her house feels very 20s to me. She dresses a little bit 40s, and she says stuff like that blows. I just like love the mishmash of like how none of those things go together. It makes me really, really happy.
I am so sorry, Godric, but when she said, like, that blows, I laughed a little bit because I just was not expecting her to say that. And,
really
like,
funny.
We know how devastated Eric was, and, like, he can't really react to this, so
he's just like, he's just like, thank you.
Do we know how old she is? Like, we know she was pre-Industrial Revolution.
Yeah, so I Googled it, and she's about 500.
So still younger.
Yeah, she's younger. Yeah. We know she's younger than Eric.
Yeah.
Because she says Eric is the eldest in her queendom.
Yeah.
So I did find that interesting. Like, she says Eric is the oldest and most powerful vampire in her queendom, but she could have his fangs for earrings. And she, like, pushes him over and, like, pins him to the ground. So, I don't know. There's some mystical...
I think it's just political power. Like,
yeah.
He can't fight her back because then he would be at, you know, the mercy of every other political
vampire, the
vampire
at
hierarchy
the Magistar getting a baby.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I look forward to perhaps the king of Mississippi.
It does seem like the vampires are somewhat like physically or like metaphysically bound by their like hierarchical, I can't say that word.
Yeah. Power they structures. They all seem to respect it.
Yeah. And so I don't actually think that they are physically restrained by those power structures, but they believe in it so hard that it's like effectively the same thing.
It feels except like that a one reflex. Time Bill like, was, I'm like
hit Eric in the face.
Didn't he
say I'm going to hit you in the face now and then him and they said are you done or something like that.
Yeah, Eric probably it was consensual.
Eric and Bill
knew he did
beat
bad.
Each other consensually.
I love Sophie-Anne's reaction to Bill's relationship. You know, I think he's monogamous with his human, and she just has the best like look of disgust I have ever seen.
It's so
good. I just love Sophie-Anne. I want to hang in her little day room playing Yahtzee for 10 years. I'll do it.
Yes. Yeah.
I want Hadley's
job. I wish I was. Yeah. I wish I was. Every time I watch this, I'm like, I wish I was in Hadley's situation. That sounds great. Mm-hmm.
There's a pool in there. Like,
I know.
I just.
We know Melissa loves a pool.
I do. They're my favorite. Sophie-Anne also tells Eric that when they're talking about Bill and Sookie, she's like, he's in love with her. And then she basically tells Eric that she thinks Eric is also in love with her. And I just find that interesting.
Yeah.
Well, she definitely tells Eric not to feed from Sookie, implying that if he does.
Can of Pringles.
Yeah.
I wish that she
once
said
once you
that.
Pop.
I don't know how
we've
to
moved
follow
on
up
from
once
Jessica at this point.
Oh god. So it's Sophie-Anne is the one who is having Eric sell the V, which is new information, and she does not like that Bill knows, and Eric's just like, I'll take care of it. We have no idea what that means.
But you're never gonna get.
But
it,
also,
you
she's
kill
a.
Him.
She's supplying the V. So I made the assumption that her supplying the V means it's her blood, but maybe that's a mistake. Like,
because I thought it was implied earlier that it was like 1,000-year-old vampire blood. So I'm not sure like what the actual source of this blood is.
Yeah. Well, Lafayette says he's just had 1,000-year-old vampire blood, but I think that was Eric.
Is Sophie-Anne making Eric sell his own blood?
Yeah. That's what I was wondering, because I feel like a few episodes ago that, like, when Pam gave him the vial, I feel like there was a mention of, like, 1,000-year-old vampire blood. I could be mixing
it
up with something
that.
Else. Or,
but
or,
it
or
also,
I feel like I remember
I do,
something, but yeah.
Yeah, I remember that, but it also could have been, like, Lafayette selling. Like, it could have just been him, like... Mm-hmm.
Or it could have just been Lafayette believing that because he doesn't have any other information.
Yeah, Lafayette probably believes it's Eric's blood, like, regardless of the truth. I just wonder if you're doing the blood as drugs, can the vampire feel your feelings?
Yeah, that's kind of
that
what
is
I assumed
something I never
the
thought
motive
about
was,
before.
Like, to spread out a tendril.
So I wonder, like, is Sophie-Anne doing this for, like, tracking purposes, or does she have, like, a big plan, or does it have to be, like, straight from the source for you to get that connection? Like, I don't think we're ever going
to
find out, but it's
we know
that
they
that it's
play
not
with the,
rules
with the vampire blood rules.
Yes.
Like, it doesn't ever really make sense. I don't think it
maybe
will.
When we're in, like, season 5, like, I'm going to stop asking these questions.
it's like she's
a Cylon. She has a plan, except...
I was going to say, this. It feels
she,
like
she
a
says
Star
she has
Trek
a plan, but...
Where, like, things, like, fit the plot. Like,
yeah,
they just use
totally.
Things how they want.
Yeah.
No, no. So it's a Battlestar Galactica thing where they say they have a plan, but don't have a plan.
It would just be so overwhelming if every person who does drugs could feel their feelings. You would be Vampire Sookie.
Ooh, interesting.
Or maybe you can control them.
That actually sounds miserable.
Speculation.
Yeah, that sounds awful.
Especially because now the people are going to be all horned up for you. This is how you get
stylish.
A stalker.
Mm-hmm. Not that a vampire really has to worry, but a human stalker. Right. There's a very easy fix to that problem.
I've lived in society for so long that I assume if I am a vampire, I still have to fear men.
I believe in vampire terms that's known as boy dinner. Moving on, Marianne, Suke, Bill, Sam, and everybody else.
We're going to a wedding.
We're going to a wedding.
Marianne's boobies look amazing.
Marianne looks so good in that dress. I'm like, appreciate that it's...
Did Graham... she have that dress altered, do you think? Or did Gran look that
good? I chose to believe that Gran looked
that good.
She's believe
both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I only didn't like Marianne had like one curl that was on the side of her face on the opposite side of her braid, so it looked like a little George Washington curl at sometimes, and it was making me very frustrated. But other than that, I love that like big, glorious, like voluptuous braid.
I really enjoyed her whole vibe. Michelle Forbes is doing like the most. I don't know how she does this character with a straight face. Like, she is like playing it so straight. Like, it just, especially in this episode, like she is like believing everything she's saying, and it's just, it works really well for me. Like, you know the actress,
so straight,
she
but
thinks
she...
it's ridiculous, but it's like she's just doing such a good job of selling it to me.
She plays it so straight, but she's not like just playing it straight and then like one emotion. She's playing it straight through the full spectrum of all of her craziness, from like kind and calm to like excited and wanting Suki to zap her to absolutely fuming and pissed off because her ostrich egg has been smashed.
Yeah, she's really
like,
earnest.
It's you're right, it's a phenomenal performance.
She's like euphoric when she gets Sam's blood.
Yeah, I was gonna say that the awe and like euphoria too when she sees the bull.
Yeah the credulousness, she plays that credulousness, mm-hmm. that the bull is Dionysus exactly as straight as she plays her frustration that the boiler is broken four episodes ago.
That's a good shout. I do love at the beginning of this bit when, like, we find out, you know, Tara, Arlene, Lafayette, and Jane are the bridesmaids, the bridesmaids, and Suki's going to be the maid of honor, which Suki's really being used as bait to lure Sam to the wedding. But, like, Suki's so mad that Marianne's, like, fucked with her friends. She's like, those are my friends. Plus Jane Boathouse. And I was just like... And then Jane Boathouse...
Top tier delivery, that one.
And then Jane Boathouse says something that was almost like the best thing
that
I ever
heard.
She's
like, I've always liked you, Suki. You give me extra pickles.
You give me extra pickles. And I was like, that is 100% why I would like someone if they gave me extra pickles. Like, that would be like, okay, they get a check mark in my little, like, I like you box.
But also, does she? Surely that's like Terry or Lafayette doing that.
Maybe she asks for maybe. Them every time that Suki orders them, like on her behalf, like from the cook.
Or like that's pickles like could be, you know, at some. We know this isn't true because we've seen the kitchen. Jesus Christ, it does not matter. But in some restaurants, like the toppings on the burger are like side work. So, it's like, mm-hmm. who is ever going to run the food is going to do that. So, whatever. It doesn't matter. Because we know that Lafayette builds that burger back there.
It's great. I love it. The You Give Me Extra Pickles was, like, my backup choice for, like, my blood type later.
So, Marianne. So, we saw Sophie and be like... Suki isn't normal. Not normal human.
Yeah, like, she basically was like, she's not really human.
Yeah, and it's like, yeah, she reads minds. Like, okay. But Suki's like so serious about this too. Because Marianne also was like, what are you? Like, you're not human. I can't vibe you into my control. And I understand that it's so we can get a big reveal about this later. And so Suki can brood over it. But it's like, you read... minds, you know, that paranormal, like metahumans, like live around you. They're shapeshifters. They're vampires. Like, you read minds. Like, why are you so sure that you're not supernatural? Like, I just think that's so silly.
I really get the impression that she just never thought about it before.
Yeah,
Like, it just, yeah. like...
Or just kind like, of like how I don't... psychic and, yeah. like... Or not psychic, but clairvoyant and...
Yeah.
Not clairvoyant. What am I thinking of?
Telepathic.
Clairvoyant's not the right thing.
Telepathic.
Telepath, thank you. Jesus Christ.
I couldn't think of the word either.
Yeah, but that you're just, like, human plus and yeah. not necessarily yeah. not human.
Yeah, exactly.
She went from not believing in any of this to being like, there's a gray area and I'm in it.
Well, I guess like there was no one, just her. Then there was vampires, but they're undead. So that's a different thing. And then there was Sam. And then there's a Maynard, which she's only really just discovered because she just turned up and gone, what the fuck mm-hmm. happened?
Yeah, she hasn't met like a werewolf or anything.
And Sookie's also never had her, like, powers yet. Present in any right. way other than telepathy. Right. Like, this is the first time that she's seen something else. So, like, I feel like that, or her kind of spiral after that makes a little bit more sense.
I mean, I am empathetic to it. I think it...
We're making excuses for her. It's possible that the Stackhouse genes run dumb across both of them.
You know she couldn't pay attention in school because she had everybody's thoughts to think about.
That's true. I just want to have a special shout out to my boys, Andy and Jason, who, like, we talked about this earlier. Like, they're basically running in, like, guns blazing, we're going to fix the town, and then they, like, get possessed almost immediately. And then when they wake up, they're like, well, the town's fixed. We must have done that. We're heroes.
Yes. Stupid.
I was like, you guys.
It's
it reminded me of like when when Han Solo like learns like Luke's plan at the beginning of Return of the Jedi. And he's like, I go away for a little bit and everyone gets delusions of grandeur. And I'm just like, yes, that's them.
I mean, Jason, this is my, I'm now steering into this thesis that Sookie is as dumb as Jason, which is that both of them just run half-cocked into scenarios.
That's true.
With just the full expectation that they're going to be fine for whatever reason.
The Sookie thing is always dummies. Funny
they're
because
both
she's,
hot dummies.
She's like, the power of politeness will force this situation to resolve. Like, she's like, how dare you wear my grandmother's wedding dress? It's like, oh, sorry, I should have asked. I forgot, I'm evil. Like Sookie just expecting, like, universal politeness. Like, Eric is rude, so she slaps him. He's 1,000 fucking years old. Like, she lives only... at the whims, like the whims of like these supernatural people that are more amused by her than anything else. Like, she's running on lucky fumes and nothing else.
The way that
but she thinks it's her politeness.
When she told him that she slept Eric, he was like, it would never occur to Lafayette to ever do that in his entire life. Because Sookie does not think before
she acts
at all.
She's got a little bit of privilege over.
I was
going to
say that's like the power of the attractive white woman, right? Is that she gets to do all of this shit and get away with it?
Yeah, that's true. I think Jason quotes like 100 action movies. Some incorrectly, some correctly. It's probably one of my favorite bits because I love all those action movies.
I definitely got. Terminator. I definitely got what's the Al Pacino gangster one?
Oh, Scarface.
Scarface.
Say hello to my little friend. Scarface. Yeah, so
well, I love the smell of napalm in the morning, not nail polish, is I believe
Jason Apocalypse Now.
Jason would think that was
Apocalypse Now.
Yeah, I watched that very recently for the first time. It was a very good movie, but also stressful and dark as fuck.
Anyway, then they go upstairs and lick an egg.
The egg licking was fucking
it's pretty gross.
It's like Lafayette has a point.
To be clear, they weren't licking eggs. They were just licking an egg. This is the show where you have to
specify. But like putting blood in their mouth. What blood were they drinking? I don't want to know where that came from. But Lafayette has a point that like Sookie has this burden of knowing everything that happened and having to like see all of that. Like they can forget if they want to. And that's obviously a whole thing in this episode. But like... they don't have to remember drinking blood and then licking a giant egg. They can go on with their lives and pretend they don't know anything about what happened.
Yeah.
But Sookie has to be has to remember forever that she drank blood and then licked an egg.
Yeah.
That gets that to was... haunt her.
She does accuse Marianne of having laid the very egg.
That was so funny.
Fantastic.
No, it's an
valid question. Valid question.
I kind of wondered where the egg came from as well, and I also would have been like, I might not have said, did you lay it? I might have just said, like, what is this? But that was very funny.
It's, like, not funny because of the
Tasia,
whole...
do you remember...
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, Tasia, do you remember the Angel Season 5 episode Smile Time?
That's the puppets? The puppet one. Yeah.
Yes. There is a line in that show which is, you don't mess with the nest egg. And all I can think of is puppet vampires versus Bill Compton, who is a little bit of a pocket puppet vampire himself.
Bill on an episode of Angel. I would watch this.
I mean, Eric is Spike, right? Like, there's way too
much. It's a very clear, like, Bill is Angel, Eric is Spike Joel, situation.
Yeah, they're very similar.
You've got the dark-haired brooder and the very blonde bad boy.
Fun one, yeah.
Speaking of...
Sorry, Melissa.
Yeah, Melissa, were you saying something? All right, you're good.
Oh, no. Well, yeah, earlier, before. What was it? Oh, it's not funny because, like, not having agency and, like, being possessed is, like, very terrifying and not funny. But, like, Tara is being very funny about this egg. And, like, literally, and, like, I think it's funny. And also, she's acting, like, squirrely specifically about the egg. Because in the episode before, they're, like, making the nest. And in this one, I don't remember exactly what Sookie says, but I don't know, something like, fuck your egg. And Tara's, like, little sound she makes and, like, her faces she makes when she snaps her head around at Sookie is just, like, so funny. Like, how dare you say that about my egg?
One thing I really like that happens in this episode, although I guess some of it, a lot of it happens off screen, is I love how well Sam and Bill work together when they're not, like, fighting over Sookie's attention. They clearly, like, most of their plan is off, you know, discussed off screen as to surprise Marianne and us. I felt fine about that. Like, I didn't need to know the plan before the plan happened.
No, and I never felt that Bill was actually giving him up. I didn't either.
And
there something was, yeah.
And as I said earlier, I think it's good Sookie didn't know, because she would have, like, she would have been like, enough already, or
she'd have Jasoned all over that.
And I also think that if she did know, then she might not have. I have a theory, because I really don't remember, like, where I think that Sookie's powers, like, don't work like how she wants them to. She just has to, like, really need to, like, their instinct kind of powers, not just like, I want to use my powers. I mean, we don't know this yet, but so I feel like she can't. If she knew what was going on, like, her powers would not work, like, at all, because she would know that there was, like, a safety net or something.
I definitely take your point about the reasons why Sookie shouldn't know the plan. However, while I was watching this, every single time, like, I just kept thinking, and obviously this is, like, my shit also, but I just kept thinking, like, if you want me going along with your plan, like, you need to tell a bitch your plan. Like, you can't tell me you have a plan and then act like you're gonna, like, trade my life for somebody's and expect me, as Sookie, not to flip the fuck out.
I think it's fine that she's flipping out, and, like, I think they wanted her to flip out is part of what I'm saying.
I know, and I think that you're right, but the whole time I was watching the episode, I just kept thinking about, like, how annoyed.
Like, right, but you're not Sookie. Like, I would tell you the plan, because I know you would be ride or die for the plan. Like, Sookie, you never know with her.
And if somebody has a plan that I don't know about, I'm just so worried I'm going to unintentionally fuck it up. Like, obviously, I'll just take this to my therapy appointment.
Plus, when would they have even told her? Like, yeah, I'm sure, being who they are, I'm sure they would have told her.
Right?
Just didn't, so.
Yeah. I forgot there wasn't much time.
Well, me and Sookie were both tricked by the plan, because I was like, oh, shit, when it was revealed. Because my mind was, like, racing. I was like, is this just a well-timed bull? Like, is the god real? How? And then it was
a well-timed bull.
You dummy.
I didn't remember that the bull was part of the plan until the bull showed up. And then I was like, oh, yeah, I remember this. But, like, while things were happening, I didn't remember.
Oddly, it's one of those things that I remember. It's one
of the like things I remember most about the season. Yeah, yeah.
It's one of the standout things for me. Yeah, I always remember the bull. I can't ever I don't always remember how that happens, but I always know that Sam is the bull.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know from cows or bulls, but that is a handsome looking bull.
Right?
Oh, I don't know if it's a bull or a cow.
I don't think a cow has horns, right?
It's got horns.
So do cows not? Wait, do cows have horns?
No.
So that's one of the differences.
No, no, but I just mean like it's a handsome looking bull.
Oh,
it's
pretty gorgeous. Beautiful.
Did Sam have a picture of it in his pocket? I thought he had to.
I have a feeling they went.
He says earlier that he has to imprint on the animal in order to shift into it, and so for some reason, in my like remembrances of this season, I remember him like looking at a picture of a bull for a while, like maybe like in a magazine or online or something. But I didn't see that happen on the screen, so I don't know if I made that up.
I feel like so maybe
Bill ran him on his back to like a farm.
That's 100%. That's exactly what I think. I think Bill like zoomed him over.
Hold on tight, spider monkey.
Exactly, and then came back. That is 100% how, in my mind, is what happened.
I think him knowing what a bull looks like is the least credible thing in both series of True Blood we've had.
He wears boots.
Sorry, what?
Like, of course he knows what one looks like. I was joking. Like, he wears boots, so he's a farmer, so he knows what one looks like.
Yeah, they're in a semi-rural area, right? Yeah. There's got to be a neighbor who just has a handsome bull around that Sam has seen a few times.
Been wrongly accused of Maynard murder.
This bull's over there minding his business while grotesque acts of violence are being taken under his
on his
image.
Name.
Jesus. Oh my
god.
The
bull is the Jason Stackhouse of season 2. I think that bull is about as intelligent as Jason Stackhouse as well.
I bet that bull is smarter. I mean, come on. Let's be serious.
So he's like Sookie Stackhouse level.
Yeah, exactly. I love that the bull just is like, fuck you, Marianne, in the stomach. And I don't know why, but her like black blood like grosses me out so much. It's so gross.
I like it.
It's good effect.
As a vibe.
I mean, I think it was like it too. It just grosses me out.
It was disgusting, but it's like, I felt like that was, I don't know, that was a good effect.
Yeah, she's so evil, her blood is black.
It made me think that was
like,
what...
that's amazing.
But it was sort of like earthy and veggie and...
Yeah.
Like,
to me, it kind of... Maynard-y. It's reminiscent of just like, just a representation of like how she is this like ancient thing that shouldn't be living. She's only living off the power of, like she says, she absorbs energy from humans and that's how she survives, but also like just the power of her own convictions is what has been keeping her alive over these millennia. And so it kind of makes sense to me that like inside she's dead, she's just kind of operating this husk,
right?
That has been kept alive kind of against nature.
Yeah. So she's been, like, rotting away inside.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
But rotting is a good word. Like, it feels like when she dies, like, it's like a rotting tree stroke.
It was like,
thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's...
It was like
it's
a less
like,
wet
I think it's,
he chose
I think that,
poorly from Indiana Jones. Like...
Well, I think it's more wet. I think it's, like,
oh, I
moister.
Thought her face looked like it was drying out when... After...
Yeah,
yeah.
I don't know. I genuinely thought it
was
really
wet,
good
the face
makeup.
Got dry.
Like,
I'll say it that way. The body was wet.
Deal. So Marianne is dead. She gets impaled on a bull's horns, and then the horn turns into Sam. Sam's arm. I don't know why Sam's arm is the horn and not the front legs.
Because we didn't want to see Sam's head in Marianne's like chest cavity.
Guy, just... yeah.
That was really funny.
And he just pulls the heart out. Her final line is, there was no God.
She says it so pathetically,
too. Squeak. Yeah. He squeaks her heart. And it's, I think it's very, very satisfying death for a fucking creepy ass villain.
Yeah, agree.
Slightly goofy, but satisfying.
It is true.
I kind of liked how, Suki was bossing everyone around afterwards because they were like at her house. Mm-hmm. You know, you take these people home. You get blah 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 off my lawn. Like, you bury the body. Don't care where.
I like how Bill is like barely standing, and Sookie's like, "Go bury that body somewhere." And
he's, I know,
like, limping off. Like, okay.
I was like, "Girl, give him some of your blood so that he can like revive a little bit." I know. I wanted him to feed on her, just like so he could like get more strength.
God, can you imagine the cleanup? Like, why does everybody go to work the next day? She needs to get everybody in that town, come the fuck over to my house right now, and you clean up after yourselves, you nasty bitches. Like, get all this out.
Such an important note about the fact that everybody works the next day. And I can save it, or I can say it now.
Just say it.
Say it now.
Sam opens Merlot's, and they have this nice talk about how, oh, it's everybody's bar. It has nothing to do with me. It belongs to everybody. You know, solidarity. Let's keep getting fucked up, even though none of us have memories. Whatever. Who cares? It's fine that he's open, but Arlene is working, and her children were abandoned for this whole entire time, and it seems like they're just now seeing her.
There's no way she'd be at
work. In her uniform, they're, like, sitting in the booth, and she's like, I'm so sorry that Sam had to take care of you because I was possessed and having public sex. Like, it's just, I cannot believe Sam
I was thinking
working. And he yells at her. Get
I was
back
thinking
to work.
About this so much last night while I was catching up, and Sam was like babysitting the kids, just thinking about like how, like, we only really see the effect on Arlene's kids, but how many kids are in that town and how many kids were neglected, abandoned, who knows what, like, in, like,
they could have seen the
got
orgy.
An infant. Or somebody has an infant that hasn't been fed in 3 days. You know, like, how many children died is what I want to know due
all
to, like,
I wanna,
neglect during
I
this
think, Oh, no, I didn't think about all the
I
other
I think if you have
dying,
infants,
no,
you should go out. Sad. But hopefully in this case, everybody who had, like, a very small toddler just wasn't out at any of these parties.
Couldn't,
you know,
get a sitter.
Invited. They said,
the sitter was
everybody's
fucked up
going
at Marianne's.
To Sookie / Marianne's, and this toddler mom said, you know, not me.
I hope so.
I've got a lot of laundry to catch up on.
People with, I'm fully supportive of people with small children getting a break, maybe not a 4-day orgy, and eating people's hearts. So I think you got to draw a line. Like, not every line's for everyone, but you know. I'm equally pleased we saw zero children apart from Arlene's kids in separation during the entirety of that plot.
I did like that one scene with them when they were like, Mom, when you were away, did you see Renee? And she was like, no, I still think he's on his vacation. And then she walks away and the girl's like, oh yeah, I think he's dead. And then the Kobe's like, yeah, I think so. Good. They're so chill about it too.
Those like, children are surprisingly well adjusted.
Yeah.
They really are.
So before we get into, like, you know, everything that happens with, like, Eggs and Tara and such, I wanted to just chat real quick about Jessica and Hoyt and Maxine. Because we had, you know, Hoyt's mom wakes up from her Marianne trance. I was trying to, like, come up with, like, a Marianne's or something. but that sounded really stupid. She remembers nothing and then finds out she was bitten. And I do appreciate that even though Hoyt has left Jessica at this point, he's like, she was provoked into biting you. He finds out everything that she said that was shitty was true. I know we talked about this a little bit earlier. But then he kind of realizes, you know, maybe I was really shitty to Jessica, even though, you know, Jessica couldn't control herself. You know, she's a baby vampire.
And she even says, she's like, I've got, you know, barely a handle
she gave
on, my,
fair warning.
On my actions right now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fair warning.
Yeah.
How embarrassed would Maxine know that she liked the bite? Somebody should tell her just to, you know, keep her humble.
Open her mind.
I mean, Maxine's horrible, obviously. I feel like Hoyt is credible, though. Like, he has obviously been forced by Maxine into looking after her. So I can see why And he romanticized the idea of vampires to an extent. So I can see why when faced with one actually biting him, his mother, however much he doesn't like his mother, I can see why he feels like he had to take her away and why he had to shut that down.
No, I understand it's horrible. As well. It makes sense. You know, but you're gonna...
Anyway, so Maxine tells him that it was true that her, his dad shot himself and there was nothing to do with the burglar, and it was just for insurance money, and that he's nearly 30 and he should know. To which I go, he's nearly what now?
Yeah, he's 28.
It's funny because I watched this episode with Ben, and when that line happened, he was like, wait, how old is that guy and how old is his vampire girlfriend? And I was like, they traded virginities. Like, she drinks blood, and it's like not okay, obviously, but...
Yeah. We're gonna hand wave away Jessica Hamby's 17-year-oldness and try not to think about it too much.
I was like, they were both really
yeah, I'm not a huge fan of Asia's girls, but
Hoyt has an operating age of like 19.
he is mentally about her age.
Well, he's partially 19 and partially 45. It's not right? Okay. Like, yeah. That's the thing about
but
it.
Yeah, I do it, ship. It's not. It's, but,
yeah.
It's, but yeah, yeah.
I'm it's choosing not okay, to
and
it.
I still am into
That's
it.
Why
so,
we
know.
Call it fiction, baby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really don't dwell on it, and I don't think about it. You know,
it just feels weird. Like, why is he 28? Why isn't he like 23? Like, I don't.
That's a good question. Like, I mean, maybe so that he can be friends with Jason, but like, Jason's why is Jason in his mid-20s or late-20s?
Why is Jason 28?
Jason could easily Jason be 23. Although if he was 23, it wouldn't 23. Be so much like Jason. Like, wrap it up
well,
with Jason's the womanizing.
Well, Jason's the older sibling, though, so I don't think it would work if he was younger.
He's older?
Yeah, he's the older brother, so he's only 25.
Jason's older.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. I don't... Well, maybe because he's such a pretty dum-dum, I, like, don't...
Yeah,
think of him as the elder sibling.
He's the eldest.
Anyway, it's a nice inversion of the ridiculously old vampire and the 17-year-old Buffy, I guess, but still.
So we have a little scene where Jessica's leaving the house and Bill's getting ready for his date with Sookie that we'll talk about later, and she says that she's going to apologize to Hoyt because they got in a fight and stuff. And it's all really nice. And Hoyt also is going to Jessica's house to kind of make up to. He brings flowers. And so when we see Hoyt at Jessica's house, I'm like, oh, it's cute, like a rom-com. They're in the wrong place. And then we find out that Jessica's actually not at Hoyt's house. She is drinking the blood of people that are really excited about sleeping with a virgin. And it kind of reminded
you should.
Me of, it kind of reminded me of, like, the spirit of the movie Promising Young Woman. Like, it made me think of that.
Okay.
And, I was like, you know what, Jessica, I support you.
It's kind of sad that, like, Bill and Jessica finally get this, like, really sweet kind of father-daughter moment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of a lie.
It's a lie, right?
Yeah.
But I put that at Bill's feet because it's like, it's a teenage girl vampire. Like, you need to be, if you want to know what she's doing, you need to be open-minded and honest and give her a lot of leeway, or it's going to be like lies, as we are seeing. You know, there are many options.
I mean, thus
options.
Far, he hasn't
she's
given her
vampire.
Any reason to tell him right. the truth. Yeah.
He thinks that it's going to be enough to be like, don't eat people in truck stops. And she's like, I see no evidence to suggest that I shouldn't do that. So I'm going to go right on ahead and do it.
I'm
going to
eat more people in more truck stops.
Yeah, I mean, I guess like the last two times he's seen her has been with Hoyt, where she was infatuated. Mm-hmm. So there's no real reason why he wouldn't believe her,
for sure.
I think. Like, so, I don't know. I find it hard. I think that's, like, we're trying to get him to give her more space to be herself. And then, like, It's a tough
one. It's not exactly that.
It's a tough one. But obviously, he's got his own priorities.
When he finds out about this, his feelings are going to be hurt that they don't have the relationship he thinks they have. But he started out like setting her up to behave this way. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, Jessica is never his number one priority.
No. Yeah. Never. And I think that's part of, that's the problem. I really think she is like a child to him, or she should be looked at that way. And I kind of, I don't disagree that she, like, leeway might be needed, but I kind of think spending time with her is more important. And, like, getting to know her and, like, showing her things, like, he's still kind of neglecting her. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of the issue too. Like, so I don't know if, like, giving her more space is what I think should be happening. Maybe he should be spending more time,
getting
to, like, actually know her,
genuine time. I'm not gonna be mad if you tell me that you ate a trucker. I just think we should talk about how it made you feel to eat him.
Yeah, they should be talking about that
and
stuff.
Talk about seasoning.
Exactly. He looked pretty bland, to be honest.
And sweaty.
Pretty, I imagine, like, it's impossible not to be sweaty if you're a trucker in Louisiana. Like,
that's probably true. It's impossible not to be sweaty if you're in Louisiana is probably, like, enough of a sentence.
Yeah.
Fair.
I've never been there. I just assume.
It's pretty sweaty.
Anyway, poor Hoyt.
Yeah, poor Hoyt.
Poor sad Hoyt. Right, the chaotic nonsense that is Jason, Andy, Eggs, Tara, Terry, and Arlene.
And Jane Bodehouse's fingertip.
That she gets reattached.
That makes no sense. Like, how many... Okay, so like, how long has it been since...
That thing should be so...
Yeah, dead.
Yeah, it's probably been too long. It's been at least 24 hours,
there
right?
are no nerves working. And it's just been outside. Yeah. It hasn't been on ice or anything.
You can't reattach something after that long. It's contaminated. Like, the most something can be contaminated is how contaminated that finger is. Yeah. And her hand, probably.
There's probably...
Like, it's a miracle she's not septic.
It was in...
Honestly...
Like, a vigil made of meat... Like,
meat.
It's not an acceptable
place for your
finger. There's
probably sex fluids on it, too.
She's going to need to lose that entire hand. That's all I'm saying. Like, there's no way that in their little Mary trance, and that doesn't work either, that they're, like, doing proper first aid. I just don't believe that for a second. So,
no, that was, like, the most fantastical part of the episode was that Jane Bodehouse got her finger sewn back on. Like, that was the most... I believed everything else except for that.
Maybe she got it replaced with a pickle.
Then I'll just eat it, and then it'll be gone again. Andy's gonna be a police officer again.
Congratulations to all of us.
I know, just in time to aid.
He got the job because he was wearing pants. Like,
the bar is in hell.
Oh, God. Poor Eggs woke up with blood all over his hands, and as I would be, is completely freaking the fuck out about it. And Tara's just like, from what happened to me, it's better if you just do not know.
Yeah, so I think this is an interesting ethical question. Right. Like, what Sookie chose to do, which was tell him the kind of unfiltered truth. That obviously, I mean, it's something he did and he deserves to know. It's in his own, you know, he wasn't under his own steam. And he does, it's him. He does deserve to know, but...
Mm-hmm.
Like, if we're weighing, like, the cost of him knowing to himself, like, is it the right thing to do? I feel like she should have given him a heavily edited PG version of the events and left it at that. Like, tell him enough to, like, calm him down so he's not, you know, dwelling on it necessarily. But, man, telling him all of that because I feel like it was obvious that he wasn't in a place to accept that it wasn't him and it wasn't his fault.
So... I don't know that she would have been able to tell him a PG version, because I feel like if she's reading his mind, then it's coming to the surface for him, and he would have known.
Well, that's
anyway.
What I'm saying. Don't actually do it. Yeah. Pretend to do it.
Oh,
and then
okay.
Be like,
don't do yeah. It, yeah. Okay. I understand now. Yeah. I
yeah. Because he doesn't know how her powers work. She could have just put her hand on his head and be like, "You be like, dipped your hands in the blood bowl and touched the egg."
Yeah. You...
I don't think she should have done it.
Don't mess with the nest egg.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't... I
think if it's me, I'm not telling him the truth. And that's, yeah. You know, is that the right thing to do? Probably not. I don't know.
And it's me, like, I'm like Lafayette. Like, I would not want to know any of it. I'd be like, do not tell me.
I mean, like, I have so many videos in my phone of, like, just being drunk with friends, and I will never watch them ever, 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 because I don't want to know. Yeah. I don't want to know how embarrassing I am. I don't want to know the stupid shit I did. If somebody has stuff to tell me the morning after getting drunk with me, I don't want it. That's not my business. That's
right, but and how many business. Times after those after that have you woken up with blood on your hands?
that's fair, but I mean more reason for me to be that. Like it, right. You know, my ignorance is also my bliss. I don't need to. That's not my business. It's not my business.
Yeah. I do think that I appreciated that Andy was when I know this skips ahead a little bit, but when Eggs goes to tell Andy like, I'm the murderer, basically. I appreciated that Andy was kind of just like, it wasn't you. And he was going to, like, let it go. And I, at the same time, like, knowing everything we know about Eggs and about human nature when you're actually, like, a good person, like, I can't imagine living with that guilt and, like, not having a consequence. Like, that seems like
yeah I mean
also unmanageable.
We've mentioned a lot of times like the stuff that Eggs did while like in his own mind that were like shady, like convincing Tara to like ignore her concerns about things and like, you know what I mean? So the more mm-hmm. he sits with the knowledge of what he did, he is going to realize that like, yes, when he did the actual murders it was not him, but he was complicit in this just based on other things.
He was happy
doing.
Enough to not question
he was totally
anything
fine
before.
To ignore yeah. the fact that he had memory lapses and he mm-hmm. wanted to convince someone else to do it when she had yeah. reservations. So I mean it's just it's like honestly really sad, and I remember the first time I watched this being like disappointed isn't the right word, because it's not like I think the show should have done something else, but just being like, I don't think I expected like this show to really be like killing characters that like I liked a lot.
Yeah. I was really surprised when he was killed actually the first time.
It feels an awful lot to me like they weren't going to pay for a contract mm-hmm. for him for the next season. Like it feels like we have to wrap this up and move yeah. the characters on.
It's like so like mean to Tara.
And we probably don't really want to deal with this. Yeah, it's very mean to Tara.
Yeah, I feel really for her because she was so in love with him.
And even just like as a character that like you're writing and like now this is like her, this is, you know, the starting place for her like storylines for the next season. It's just like, if I spent my time creating someone, I would not do this to them. I mean, I would maybe because like I don't make art, so I don't know what I would do. But you know what I mean? It just seems like it's mean.
I really enjoyed... So you mentioned Tara when she was talking to Suki and she was talking to her about how she got sucked into all of this. And she was like very reflective right away, which I found to be something that someone might not have realized for a few weeks, but they mm-hmm. just put it in Tara's mouth like immediately after how she was talking about how Maryam made her feel like she had a family. And I just was thinking back to the beginning when they first met and Tara had been in jail and Maryam brought her home without judgment, and I'm like, anyone would have fallen for that mm-hmm. honestly.
Oh yeah, I mean when she was set up to yeah like I think they show quite clearly that Maryam manipulated her into that situation.
Yeah,
I think that the difference, the uncomfortableness I have with the way that Tara is written compared to some of the other characters is I feel like the other characters get to win. And I don't feel like Tara ever gets to mm-hmm. win.
I feel the same yeah. about Lafayette. Tara and Lafayette, I feel like, are just kind of constantly traumatized in this show. Like, not to get too yeah. far into nature yeah. stuff. It feels like they're constantly taking a beating on this show with very little highs. it's like only lows, and it just gets lower and lower and lower to the kind of torment that they put those two characters in. And it's like, you know, when you're looking at it, and these are like the two black main characters of this show, like that is not. And it kind of goes to Eggs too. Like if Eggs were a white dude and doing what he did at the end of the episode, it would feel like a very like suicide by cop situation. But because of the context of him being a black man and this happening, it doesn't feel like that. It feels deeply troubling from like a socially, you know, from a social context. And that that the show like just seems to like not acknowledge that is a little bit troubling. I feel like, especially when we know how much more torment their black characters are going to have to endure.
Yeah, it just keeps going. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's the fact that Jason kills him, apart from it being just an indictment of why people shouldn't have guns, but because that it stops you going from non-lethal situation to a lethal situation. The fact that Jason kills him and then it's covered up. Andy does it in a way is like, you know, his life was seemingly in danger. It was terrifying. But someone died and kind of no one pays for it. And it's, it's uncomfortable the way that it falls on those characters. Mm-hmm. And also, if we want to extend it to Miss Jeanette, if we want to extend it to the worst person in the world, who you know I hate, Letty Mae, like these are all characters that just get beaten down and beaten down, and it's tough to ignore how much that stands out.
Yeah, I think what you said earlier about them not having any wins, really, like it's when everybody else, like everybody gets traumatized in this show, it's kind of, you know, this is the show's bread and butter.
Yeah.
But I think the important distinction there is that in the case of like Sookie and everybody else, like they have triumphs too. But it doesn't feel like that for Tara Lafayette, et cetera.
Yeah. Well, I can't remember what the next season brings other than it brings a sexy, sexy, sexy Joe Manganiello. So we'll see where else comes from.
Sam has Sam has a bit of a wrap up as well. You know, he really did risk his life for the whole town, basically, as Sookie points out. And he's realizing that this town is, you know, I think he realizes he loves these people and he does want to stay there, but he is curious and wants to find out about his birth parents. And he decides to go to his adopted parents, the family that we saw, I think it was this season when we saw him turn into a dog and then they ditched him. And they're pretty shocked when he shows up. But I appreciated that when he asked for the information, his adoptive mom, I don't even want to call her a mom, like, because she ditched him. This woman is just like, no, we promised we wouldn't. And I'm just like, you care about promises now? Like, come on.
Right,
you
adopted a child.
And then the dad, yeah, exactly. And then the dad, who's dying anyway, it seems, was just like, here's the info. I can't imagine what it was like for Sam to be in that room with these people. And he's so calm. Mm-hmm. Like, I couldn't be me.
Yeah.
No, I think it's clear that he's been basically running ever since they abandoned him, and it's only this sort of the fact that he was willing to die to try and stop Marianne. He was hoping he wouldn't die because Bill and him had this plan, but he said, you know, if it didn't work, he was prepared to. It felt like he's come to some sort of, I don't know, point where he can move forward, and that was the trigger for him going to seek out his adoptive parents and his birth parents. And I'm sure he'll be back to exploit his waiters in seasons to come. But I don't know. I feel very briefly positive about our boy Sam.
Yeah, I feel better about him than
it's
I
a good
have.
Episode for him.
Yeah, so. I think he turned around a lot for me the second half of the season. He I mean, to be fair, it was partially because he and Sookie were never really in the same room.
It helps.
Because he, like, becomes a different person around her. But like, yeah, I feel like, I don't know. He seems like a little just more settled.
His, as tragic as the relationship with, and as, you know, kind of based on falsehood as the relationship with Daphne was, it was the first time he was himself in a relationship. Mm. And I think it's almost a gateway situation for him, that the confidence to have to be himself, yeah, in that relationship allowed him to have further confidence. So yeah,
that makes sense.
You know, he's like, still a creepy fucker, but
yeah
it, but it, you know, positive signs. I will be vaguely complimentary about Sam. There you go. Our final storyline is Sukkah and Bill and a dress.
So Bill sends Sukkie a dress from a shop to wear to dinner. And I don't think that this is like a spoiler, but I was going to save it for later, but I wanted to, I'll just say it now. In the book, Bill owns this, I don't know if he owns like the building that this shop is in.
Yes. So he's like the landlord of like a couple businesses. I forgot about that. Yes.
So he basically like told Sukkie in the book, like, if you ever want an outfit from this, just get it and they'll bill it to my account. And I don't think Sukkie like ever takes him up on
this. She's like offended by it.
It's weird. Yeah, she's like, I can buy my own clothes, thank you.
And I also kind of think that the Tara character, yeah, in the book, like, owns one of the clothing stores that
Tara's Tots.
Yes, or is something. The landlord.
Togs. Tara's Togs.
Yeah, I think so. Because she's, like, she's not a Tara that we know. She just is a Tara.
No, she's just, like, someone she went to school with. And, like, Eggs is also someone they went to school with. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Bill has this pretty, that dress was very pretty. It's not something I'd wear, but that's only because I don't wear pastels. But it was a pretty dress, a very fancy. Like, I'd wear that, like, to like, a wedding or something, or, like, a cocktail party.
If a boy sent me a dress, I don't think I would be thrilled. Because I feel like, unless they just knew, like, fashion and your fashion really well, that, like...
Yeah.
Like, picking out clothes is so hard already. That, like, yeah, the idea of somebody just sending me a box with a dress and me being like, okay, I put this on, but now it's giving me, like, a third boob situation, and I can't wear this. I will never wear this. Like,
I'm into the idea of a partner picking out my outfit from things I already own. I would want, like, here's a dress, hope it fits.
Or, like, take you shopping, and I will...
Yeah, I'll swipe the card.
Like, you pick it out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sending the outfit before the date happens in so much, like, literature. Like, so many, like, romance stories or, like, fan fictions. Like, that is just a staple of, like, a certain genre where I feel like there is, like, a power imbalance between the characters. Like, it just feels, like, almost tropey of, like, the type of relationship that they have. But it's a good dress for
like something. I own she you. Like, I can put this dress. Yeah. Like, you're my doll.
It's like very Edward Cullen.
It specifically reminded me of Raiders of the Lost Ark, where Belloc takes a dress and put and says, gives it to Marion and says, "I would very much."
Yeah, it's like a trope. Like,
wear this, and he's a French Nazi, and we don't support people like that.
Yeah, it is like a villain trope. I definitely think. And a romance trope. I think they're separate tropes, though. Like, they're kind of...
Well, yeah, because in, like, a romance, the villain turns out to just be, like, a misunderstood stern man who's still hot.
Stern man.
And also a duke.
And his name is actually Stern. Sorry. I don't know why I said that.
Yeah, they go to this French restaurant, and they dance to, like, a country song. And I looked up who it was just because I felt like it was going to be a singer that I recognized because of the way it sounded. And it's Jerry Lee Lewis, which just surprised the shit out of me because I didn't know he made country sounding music. But I really only know his music from watching the movie Great Balls of Fire with my family a lot when I was growing up. And also, fun fact, this is just thematically correct because Bill's 200 years older than Sukkie and Jerry Lee Lewis married like a 13-year-old. The end. She was also his cousin.
Jeez. This has been Incest Facts. Isn't it
the song that Marty McFly plays in the Under the Sea dance in Back to the
Amazing Future? Amazing question. I've never seen that.
That is a Chuck Berry song.
I thought that was Chuck Berry. Never seen
Back to the Future.
That's a Chuck Berry song because the guy performing's name is Martin Berry, and he calls and he's like, "Chuck, I have something." I watched this movie the other day.
Yeah,
but yes.
Okay, all right, fine. I'm confusing the two.
Yeah.
But they dance very cutely. They are very cute together. Bill has booked out the whole restaurant. He then, says his plane ticket to Vermont because that's where vampire marriage is legal, and proposes, and she's not sure about it. I would like to say that I feel they've been dating for about 2.5 weeks. It feels early.
Well, there was 2 weeks in between at the end of season one.
And like, you gotta see how you can handle your relationship when you're not in crisis. Like, they have been in crisis from
this is a speed day situation. They met.
So yeah, exactly. Emotions are heightened. Everybody's feeling extra horny too. So like,
sorry, real quick. Jerry Lee Lewis is a white man. Just I had to confirm that.
Oh yeah,
and the and the people different yeah.
That's didn't Edgar Allan Poe also marry his much younger cousin?
Oh, great question. I don't know.
There's probably like a book.
Or he
out
had
there
a big crush
the famous
on her.
People
I know
that
Annabelle
married
Lee,
their
right?
cousins.
Interesting. I have a tangent to go on about Annabelle Lee, so let's just move on before it happens.
This time it was on that show New Girl. I'm just
kidding. It wasn't even gonna be New Girl.
I'm completely joking.
Is it the song by Tiger Army?
No. It's that I was reading The Locked Tomb, which has some references to it, at the same time that Follow the House of Usher was coming out. And so I learned that Annabelle Lee was a Poe poem from the Netflix show Follow the House of Usher, which gave me context for a very confusing book I was reading.
Oh, got it. That was a poem I really liked when I was younger, but I haven't read it. I know
it was written for his wife, but I'm trying to figure out if his wife was his cousin.
Got it. So while you're looking that up, Bill surprises Sookie at this French food restaurant with tickets to Vermont, where human vampire marriage is legal, and he also proposes to her. And understandably, Sookie's overwhelmed by all of. I think she realizes that their life has been in crisis the whole time. Like, that's not normal for her prior to meeting Bill, you know?
Mm hmm.
And she's like, I may not be human. I can completely understand not wanting to marry someone if you don't even know who you are.
And they haven't talked about what's going to happen when she's old. He's like, it's fine. Let's worry about it later. We're going to worry about it before we sign anything. Okay.
Like, and that's like an extra reason to not trust his motivations. Like, I just don't trust his reasons for wanting to marry her. Like, I don't.
It's such a good point.
It feels like he's got ulterior motives, but. I just don't know what they are yet.
And what if Sookie wants a baby?
Yeah.
I mean, in the book, she goes through it. I can't imagine Bill wanting to have an adopted human baby.
Yeah. In this book, they look at Bill's like family lineage and his family Bible. And Sookie has a moment of being like, someone had Bill's baby. And like, I will never get to do that.
Yeah. Which Marianne actually like. Earlier,
this feels like a conversation they could have on their fifth date.
Yeah, but earlier in the episode, when Marianne was like, you know, they were doing the wedding stuff, and she's like, "You shouldn't be wearing my grandmother's wedding dress." Marianne's like really shitty to her and is like, "Well, you aren't going to use it." And it just like, you know, it kind of foreshadowed the end of the episode, I think.
Yeah. Hmm. Just in case anybody was dying to know, Edgar Allan Poe did indeed marry his cousin when she was 13 and he was 27. And that's why I always think of him when I think of Jerry Lee Lewis, because twinsies, I guess.
I see it.
Creepy, creepy twinsies.
We thought that Hoyt and Jessica had a problem.
Right.
I was going to say, we're a little bit away from Hoyt and Jessica.
Oh, God.
But when she goes to the bathroom, she sort of like looks at herself in the mirror and
is like,
decides that
what the fuck am I doing?
Yes, Bill Compton, I will marry you. But Bill Compton is not there.
No,
someone puts a silver chain around his neck and snatches him out of the
snatched
restaurant.
Him.
I thought that was a very good cliffhanger.
Yeah, me too. And Eric did say he was going to take care of Bill. So is he a suspect?
Yeah, so suspect. I'm like, what's going on here?
Eric is suspect number one.
The idea that you would fall in love, get proposed to, have a crisis, say yes, and then like not even get to tell the man that you decided yes because he got snatched by nefarious actors distressed me when I was in college.
I mean, to be fair, I still was kind of like, it took a bit to not go into the next episode, so yeah. It's just stressing me right now.
I watched the pre-credits
on the next episode straight away.
I remembered something was going to happen. Like, when I saw Bill and Sookie in the restaurant, I was like, oh, like, I remember that something bad happened, and then I didn't remember exactly what it was until I felt like the shadows of distress feelings, and I was like, oh, I do remember this. I did not like them being separated. I did not like this.
I had remembered as soon as Sookie got the dress, then I remembered the whole rest of it.
I'd forgotten it completely. So I was suddenly like, oh no! And I would agree. I think this is a very good cliffhanger. So do we want to
rank it
that cliffhanger? We have 23 cliffhangers. This will be the wherever it fits, it will be our 24th. Our number one cliffhanger is Gran is dead. Our number 23 cliffhanger is Godric rescues Sookie. Not really a cliffhanger. So are we feeling like top three here, top five? What people think?
I definitely think top five.
I would put it low.
Did you say you put it low, Tayshia?
Yeah, I mean, it's weird because some of these, like, I feel like Luke's suicide vest would be higher for me, like higher than Barry as a telepath and stuff like that. So it's kind of hard to, because I feel like it's maybe around something like a suicide vest, crazy cliffhanger, but like, or like maybe lower than that, but definitely higher than like Barry as a telepath. So, with what we've got, I would probably put it after number five, like the new number five or the new number six or something, somewhere around there.
So number four is Eric eats a redneck at the beginning of the season. Number five was the dead leg, which we thought might be Lafayette's at the end of last season, and then number six is Daphne putting the bullhead on Marianne.
Yeah, so I definitely put it higher than that.
I think
it should be so either the new number six or the new number five.
Yeah, that's what I would say too.
I like it.
I'm gonna say new number five. I think that we didn't know who the dead leg was, but
dead leg
I
should be like a band name or something. I don't know why.
That's wet leg. I immediately wanted to watch the next episode and see who it was and what was going on.
I had that inclination too.
I feel like Eric eats a redneck might be way too high.
Yeah,
I think so too. Yeah,
we can.
The funny part is that we
all did it.
The funny part is, yeah, we can move it.
We can move it.
So, okay, I'm going to suggest that this thing goes at number four, which is currently Eric.
Okay, I think we put Eric so high because we were excited about his hair. I feel like we got a little clouded.
We had some major, like, Eric rose-colored glasses on when we made these decisions.
Yeah. Okay, I like this.
We cannot be held to those decisions.
Okay, so I'm going to say that, and then I'm also going to say...
We had that way too high.
And then I'm going to say that when we finish season three, we will have a separate mini episode where we sort out the rankings.
Oh, I like that.
I love that.
Yeah, yeah.
Love
everybody can like make their case for
mid-project cleanup.
Oh my god. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
I think we have to move Eric eats a redneck, but I don't know that we have to do it right now.
No, we'll sort that out. We'll sort that out later. This is our new number four. Which is Bill?
Bill?
Someone do a better.
Say it with vampire. Melissa.
I'm looking
Melissa,
at you, Melissa. Yeah. You're
vampire Bill?
Yeah.
Yes,
vampire
Bill.
Bill? That sounds more like Jessica.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh yeah, that was a Jessica.
That was a spot on Jessica.
It's hard to differentiate when I'm not like watching the episode. I'm not like a professional. I don't even know what the word for this would be, so I'm obviously not one.
Impersonator?
Yeah.
Impressionist.
Yeah,
impressionist.
Either.
There you go. Where'd Bill go?
Where did Bill go? No character intros except for I wrote the vampire napper LOL because, like, they might be new. This could be their intro. Only time will tell.
That's fair.
Yeah, honestly, I don't even remember.
I don't remember.
I remember some things that happened as a result of this, but I don't remember, like, the exact nitty gritty of how this happens or what comes of it.
Yep. Same.
Okay. What is most chaotic? Tasia, you haven't written anything in the notes, so I'm going to go for
it. Oh my god. And this is me remembering that I did not think of any of these things. Okay, cool. Chaotic. The egg. Everything about the egg. The licking of the egg, the smashing of the egg, the did you lay this egg?
All of it. I co-signed that.
Did you lay it? What's with the egg? Did you relate?
It's so funny because I was literally that, like, thinking like almost those exact words, and then she said it, and I was like, Asuki, this is a moment for us.
The way that Lazzy just said it right now, I'm like, are you Chandler Bing? Like, did you lay? It was just scary. Like, could you be laying any more eggs?
Could you have laid a bigger egg?
The word egg just, like, sounds just bad to me now.
Ostrich.
The egg licking was also my most chaotic, but yeah, egg in general.
Yeah,
it's fucking weird.
I think the egg's a good one. Yeah. I had Jason. It's like if a tree falls in the woods, it's still a tree. You're so close. So close, buddy. You're so close to the idiot. You're so close. Oh,
I love it. It
just ruffle his hair.
Just to, like, bring it back to the Future, it reminds me of, like, Biff Tannen never knows how to, like, say the, like, phrases. He's like, make like a tree and get out of here. Like, that sounds like something Jason would say.
Yeah, it's exactly right.
It's make it's like a tree and leave.
Sorry, nothing goes over my head. Yeah. My reactions are too fast and I would catch them.
My most chaotic thing is the fact that, like, this wedding was, like, a part of the plot the whole time somehow. Who knew?
So the show is being chaotic to you.
Yeah. Like a surprise wedding. And it's like a Marianne's master plan was this thing that had never even once been mentioned. I love it.
All right. And most horny?
Elise? Me, every time I see Sam's butt. It's a really nice one.
Mine is Jessica for like doing sneaky vampire shit. She loves it.
Fair.
Tasia?
I'm going to go Marianne, horny for her god, getting literally penetrated.
True. Yes.
I'm going to go Sam was very horny in this episode.
Literally.
Ayo.
But then he, like, when he pulled out, like, Marianne's heart, and he had, like, when he pulled out, you know. There's different methods of control there. And he had, like, this sort of, like, black blood running down his arm. And, like, his fist and half of his arm was, like, covered in black. And I was thinking, that's a cool-looking tattoo, though.
Like, one of my favorite, like, character designs is, like, witches that have black fingers. Like, Agatha in Wanda and the witch in that Gretel and Hansel movie from
a few years
ago. That kind
of end in, like, claws.
Yeah. Yeah, love it. Mm-hmm. Just looks so good.
All right. Any spoilers and book stuff? I did note that as we come back after to Merlot's after Marianne's dead, the first line comes from Charlaine Harris, who says something like, nothing crazy would ever happen in Bond, Tom.
I didn't realize that was her.
Author of our books.
Wow, have fun. Yeah.
It's notable because the line is so weird and clunky.
Yeah, yeah.
There. I already said mine about the dress store, and then we talked about Tara's dogs.
Yeah.
But, I said this in a previous episode, but this Marianne or Callisto plot gets wrapped up fairly quickly in the book. It's not really the main focus. We have a lot more of it in the show because the book stays with Suki the whole time. So I really liked how they grew that part of the plot.
I think if you put Michelle Forbes in it, you've got to give her something to do, and damn well she does a good job.
Yes.
I guess that's a good transition into season reflections. Then.
I rewatched her. Unless you had a book thing to say, not to like interrupt the the transition, but I recently rewatched all the Hunger Games movies, and she's in the last one. Yes. I think as like the commander.
She's like that security person. Yeah.
And it was jarring to like I knew because I think at the time that I first saw that movie, I was enough separated from True Blood to be like, oh yeah, I recognize her. Oh yeah, she's in True Blood. Okay, blah blah blah. But it was interesting to watch it now when I'm like fully in season two of True Blood, and then seeing her in Hunger Games, it was like very weird, like to divorce those characters. But she's so good in everything.
It's so funny. Every time I watch that movie, which I've seen it a bunch, but I haven't watched it recently, I always like forget she's in it until I'm like, mm-hmm. oh, there she is. Because
mm-hmm. you've watched so much of it by the time you get to that movie that it's like surprising that there's even like new characters to introduce.
And that movie is so stacked with like cameos.
Yes, yes.
There's so many characters like, added. That's Ali like everybody's. Mahershala Ali, Natalie Dormer. Like there's so many. Yeah. Oh, Gwendolyn Christie. Like there's so many people in that movie that are just
crazy.
I'm beginning to think I haven't seen the last one.
You should watch it. It was the two-parter movies. Mm-hmm. I like all the movies.
Oh, maybe I only saw the first part of Mockingjay.
Yeah, it's part two.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so I remember her from Homicide, Life on the Street, and Next Gen.
Yeah, she's in TNG.
She's truly incredible and just as insanely intense in Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, she's great in that.
She's fantastic in Battlestar Galactica. So, yeah, I think she's by far the most compelling villain in this and most vampire shows, frankly, like truly in a way that is like not just like I'm set up against our heroes because I want to beat our heroes. She doesn't give a crap about our heroes, right? She's just doing her own thing and they happen to be there.
The only time she really involves herself with Sookie is just as a means to get to Sam, so it is really interesting. It's a really good point that you bring up that like Marianne's just here for vibes and here for her mission, and she doesn't give a shit about Sookie, and like the only person on this show who doesn't give a shit about Sookie, so it's kind of fun. But yeah, I think for that reason I really do love this season so much. I've talked a lot about this, but I think it's just extremely spooky, and which, you know, I think makes it really fun and really compelling and really watchable, and yeah, it's a great season.
I really like this season more than season one. Part of it is, like, we're acquainted with the characters for longer, and I really, one of my favorite things just about rewatching television, because I rewatch things a lot, is how I find comfort in characters acting as you expect them to, and that is something that I find really comforting. So the characters are becoming more themselves as time goes on. They're falling into the friendships that they have throughout the show, you know. We have Andy hating Jason all of season one. Like, that felt weird to me to watch because in my mind, they're buddies. So this is kind of the start of that. And as you guys all said, like, Marianne's terrifying. I say that complimentary. And I didn't... Renee's accent was so hard for me and annoying. So, like, I was just really glad to be done with that. but... I've just been having a lot of fun chatting with you guys about this too. I really am having a good time.
Yeah, I really love this season. I think Marianne is fantastic. I think getting to see Godric was great. Getting all the Jason and the church stuff was fun. Eric's hair is so much better. In fact, everyone's hair is so much better this season. The only thing I'm going to say in criticism is nowhere near enough Pam this season.
Mm-hmm.
Nowhere near.
I would agree.
But otherwise, really, really great fun season. Really great fun to talk about what part of a tree is its butt with Tessa and the rest of us.
How fun would any kind of scene between Marianne and Pam have been?
Amazing.
Like, I want to see that.
I feel like we don't deserve it. Like... It's like, that's why they didn't give it to us. We're not good enough children.
I feel like Pam would just roll her eyes and then just turn around and zoop away. She's like, not dealing with this shit. This is
I feel like the like camera would explode or something. Like they're just
I also feel
much.
Like Pam would be kind of like reluctantly admiring of Marianne, just like for Marianne's passion.
Yeah, because Pam doesn't so really care about humans, but like so to see Marianne in her element, I think Pam would be very into it.
Yeah. Writing fanfic now.
Love it. I'm sure that exists.
But I mean, when we got like Godric and we got Sophie Anne, so we got a lot more vampire. We got, again, so much plot, so much like character development, so much sort of backstory in this season. So looking forward to next season.
Yeah, me too.
Melissa, I think you're the
I mean, I have all the same thoughts you guys have already said. I have the most fun doing this podcast with you all. I really like to make time to like watch something intentionally and then like have fun with my friends talking about it. That is my favorite. So obviously I love that we are doing this project. And I just think it's exciting that this show is only going to get like nuttier, and I do not really remember what happens, but like I, for as much like Eric as we got this season, I'm so excited for like more of Eric, and as much fun as we had like talking shit about the decision making of like Sam and Jason and Bill, like they are only going to get to make more decisions that we are going to get to judge. And I can't wait.
Yes, I love it.
All right. I think that wraps us up. I think this was the season that Jessica met Hoyt.
Yeah. Yeah. That is. Baby boy Hoyt lives for another episode.
Okay. In that case, I think we can roll into plugs. Elise, tell us where you can we can find you.
You can find me on Blue Sky, Letterboxd, and Storygraph at Chicken Tendi. That's T-E-N-D-I. You can find my other podcast, Pod Wraiths, a Deep Space Nine rewatch podcast, on Blue Sky, Instagram, and at Pod Wraiths, W-R-A-I-T-H-S, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
And Tayshia.
You can find me on Instagram at RageyCakes, and you can find my occasionally YA podcast Act Ya Age on Instagram, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, everywhere you get podcasts.
You can find me at Mellow Yellow on Blue Sky and Letterboxd, and Mellow Yellow XX on Instagram.
You can find me on Blue Sky at Lozymandias. You can find my podcast The Asimov Cast, looking for joy and inspiration in works of Isaac Asimov, and I took a Christmas break, but should be a couple of episodes back deep into season two by the time this comes out. Thank you very much to DJ Empirical for our theme. We will take a short season break, but we should be back in March. You can find the pod on Instagram and Blue Sky at FangBangersPod with a Z, and email us your chaotic, horny thoughts on True Blood, please. And we've covered tree sodomy, so feel free to pick another topic to FangBangersPod@gmail.com. I'm Lozzie, and my blood type is luckily using my right hand for most things.
And I'm Elise, and my blood type is Kid Glock.
I'm Tayshia, my blood type is Diet Coke with Lime.
And I'm Melissa, and my blood type is not remembering everything I've done.
Nice.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.